I'm O'Meal Holding Geico. Hi, everyone. Thanks for being here. I'm a little bit distracted because of sometimes I wonder with our state of information today in this age of greed, anger, and foolishness. This great engine of disinformation and sensationalism, so much seems to cater to our worst natures. As Nietzsche would say, we seem to be so busy, curious, and celebrating in a way our evil paths. I worry that it's not only a distraction, but an influence to behave in a like manner. This is definitely the defiled age, and it can get us down. It's hard when we reach out. It's difficult to find those things that inspire and encourage us. The information's there. You can find it. It's just that we're the ones who have to constantly make the effort. And as we continue this Go Show on the 14 Slanders, I want you to keep that in mind. I think as I start to read this again, you'll see where I'm coming from. So let me just get into it. This is Nietzsche continuing, saying, the teacher of the law chapter says, quote, if you make offerings to the monk who preaches the Lotus Sutra and hear its teachings for even a moment, not his or her teachings, but the teachings for even a moment, then you will experience joy because you can gain even greater reward than one who offers immeasurable treasures to the Buddha for the space of 80 million kalpas. So what does that mean? I mean, that's why we're here, right? To unpack this stuff. So this applies exactly to what I'm meditating about as I speak to you here. The Buddha, as we explored in the last part, refers to Shakyamuni Buddha. It also refers to your Buddha, my Buddha, the Buddha-ness. And so when we confront the Buddha-ness, or in this case, Shakyamuni Buddha, a man who has attained perfect and immediate enlightenment, we're very impressed, aren't we? Without question, we're just like, wow, Buddha. Our Buddha, your Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha, all the same Buddha-ness. We don't question it. We might question it, but what I mean to say is we intrinsically understand the import of it. I hesitate to use the word value because that's so much the world of attachment, isn't it? What we value more or less. But in an abstract sense, the value of meeting with Buddha-ness is unassailable. So if we work to support that Buddha-ness, well, of course, no question. But when we pay attention to one another, as we teach ourselves the method to awakening. Awakening what? Our Buddha-ness, our Buddha. We tend to not value it as highly. Why is that? See, that's that part of that earthly attachment thing, that samsaric obstacle. Because it is no different. It is the same. So what Nietzsche here is saying is if you pay attention and appreciate someone who is helping you understand the teachings, the Dharma, the Buddha-ness, and you listen with intent, your attitude is one of appreciation, you transcend the vessel. For instance, what we're doing right now, it isn't about me. It's about me acting as a conduit to Buddha-ness, to the teachings of Buddha-ness, the Dharma. And with that kind of respect and attention, your attitude to me acting as a vessel for Buddhahood goes right through me to what? To some amorphous, omniscient Buddha somewhere else? Absolutely not. This is the amazing thing, is that by respecting and listening with intent, it is your Buddha-ness that's being reflected here. It is your awakening that is being sought after and respected here. Not me. I'm just a mirror for you. I'm just a conduit for you. I'm just a director of teaching for you. Sorry, my neck is really bothering me today. But it is your Buddha that you're now paying attention to and offering your time to and respecting. This is what Nietzsche is pointing out. The rewards you get for applying yourself through this process that we have with the Sangha to teach yourself through another, the scholarship, the understanding, the meaningfulness of attainment, awakening, Dharma, is far more valuable than to spend the respect and time to someone else's enlightenment. As awe-inspiring as it is, it's displacing your self, your Buddhahood, toward someone else's. That's the subtle message here. Shakyamuni, enlightened Buddha. But if you simply pay homage to him and his Buddha-ness, you're missing the point. It is your Buddha-ness that is at hand here, that all of this teaching is about. That's why the rewards are so much greater. Do you follow? Even an ignorant person can obtain the rewards, great rewards, by serving someone who expounds the Lotus Sutra, no matter if he is a demon or an animal. If someone proclaims even a single verse or phrase of the Lotus Sutra, you must respect him as you would the Buddha. This is what the sutra means when it says, quote, "You should rise and greet him from afar, showing him the same respect you would a Buddha. You should respect one another as Shakyamuni and many treasures did at the ceremony in the Treasure Tower chapter." Because your Buddha is Buddha-ness. There's no difference. Except that you experience it through your own vessel, your earthly vessel, your mundane self vessel. The priest Sami Bo may be lowly, But since he can explain even a little about the teachings of the Lotus Sutra, you should respect him as you would the Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha himself, and ask him about the teachings. Quote, rely on the law and not upon the persons should be your guide. Remember that refrain? Well, that's what it means. The law is your Dharma, your Buddha-ness. Follow that. Don't rely on the vessels. Long, long ago, there was a young man who lived in the snow mountains and was called the Boy Snow Mountains. He gathered ferns and nuts to keep himself alive, made garments of deer skin to clothe his body, and quietly practiced the way. As he observed the world with care and attention, the boy came to understand that nothing is permanent and everything changes, and that all that is born is destined to die. This weary world is as fleeting as a flash of lightning, as the morning dew that vanishes in the sun, as a lamp easily blown out by the wind, or as the fragile leaves of the plantain are so easily broken. No one can escape this transience. In the end, all must take the journey to the Yellow Springs, the land of darkness. When we imagine the trip to the other world, we sense utter darkness. There is no light from the sun, the moon, or the stars, not even so much as a fire to light a torch. And along that dark road, there is no one to keep you company. When one is in the Saha world, one is surrounded by parents and relatives, brothers and sisters, wife and children, and retainers. Fathers may show lofty compassion and mothers profound loving sympathy. Husband and wife may be as resolute, one-minded as two shrimps of the sea who vow to share the same whole and never to part throughout life. Yet, though they push their pillows side by side and sport together under quilts embroidered with mandarin ducks, they can never be, that's from a folklore story, they can never be together on that journey to the land of darkness. As you travel alone in complete darkness, who will come to encourage you? Though old and young alike dwell in the realm of uncertainty, it is part of the natural order for the elderly to die first and the young to remain a while. Thus, even as we grieve, we can find some cause for consolation. Sometimes, however, it is the old who remain and the young who die first. No one feels more bitter resentment than a young child who dies before its parents. No one despairs more deeply than parents who see their child precede them in death. People live in this fleeting world where all is uncertain and impermanent. Yet day and night we think only of how much wealth they can amass in this life. From dawn to dusk they concentrate on worldly affairs, and neither revere the Buddha nor take resolute mind and conviction in the law, in their own Buddhahood. They ignore Buddhist practice and lack wisdom, idling their days away. And when they die and are brought before the court of Yama, the Lord of Hell, what can they carry as provisions on the long journey toward the threefold world? What can they use as a boat or a raft to ferry themselves across the sea of sufferings of birth and death to the land of actual reward or the Buddha land of tranquil light? When one is deluded, it is as if one were dreaming. And when one is enlightened, it is as if one had awakened. Thinking in this way, the boy Snow Mountains resolved to awake from the dream of the transient world and to seek the reality of enlightenment. So he secluded himself in the mountains and devoted himself to deep meditation, sweeping away the dust of delusion and befuddlement in his single-minded pursuit of the Buddhist teaching. The deity Chakra looked down from heaven and observed the boy snow mountains in the distance. He thought to himself, though the baby fish are many, there are few that grow up to be a big fish. Though the flowers of the mango tree are many, there are few that turn into fruit. In like manner, there are many people who set their hearts on enlightenment, but only a few who continue their practice and in fact attain the true way. The aspiration for enlightenment in common mortals is often hindered by evil, unlife-affirming, negative influences, and easily swayed by circumstances. Though many warriors don armor, few go without fear into battle. Let me go test this young man's resolve. So saying, Chakra disguised himself as a demon and appeared at the boy's side. At that time, the Buddha had not yet made his appearance in the world, and although the boy Snow Mountains had sought everywhere for the scriptures of the great vehicle, he had been unable to learn anything from them. Just then, he heard a faint voice saying, quote, all is changeable, nothing is constant. This is the law of birth and death, end quote. The young man looked all around in amazement, but there was no one in sight except a demon standing nearby. In appearance, it was fierce and horrible. The hairs on its head were like flames, and the teeth in its mouth like swords, and its eyes were fixed on the boy in a furious glare. When the boy saw this, he was not frightened in the least. He was so overjoyed at the opportunity to hear something of the Buddhist teaching that he did not even question it. He was like a calf separated from its mother that hears the faint sound of her lowing. Quote, who spoke that verse? There must be more, end quote, he thought. And once more he searched all around, but there's still no one to be seen. He wondered if it could have been the demon who recited the verse. But on second thought, that seemed impossible, since the demon must have been born a demon in retribution for some past evil act. The verse was certainly a teaching of the Buddha, and he was sure it would never have come from the mouth of a lowly demon. But as there was no one else about, he asked, quote, was it you who preached that verse? End quote. Quote, don't speak to me, replied the demon. I've had nothing to eat for days. I'm starved, exhausted, and almost out of my mind. I may have uttered some sort of nonsense, but in my dazed condition, I don't even know what it was. For me to hear only the first half of that verse, said the boy, is like seeing only half the moon or obtaining half a jewel. It must have been you who spoke, so I beg you to teach me the remaining half. The demon replied sarcastically, you are already enlightened, so should feel no resentment, even if you don't hear the rest of the verse. I'm dying of starvation, and I don't have the strength to speak. Say no more to me. Could you teach me if you had something to eat? Asked the boy. If I had something to eat, I might be able to, said the demon. Elated, the boy said, well, then what kind of food would you like? And the demon replied, ask no more. You will certainly be horrified when you hear what I eat. Besides, you would never be able to provide it. Yet the boy Snow Mountain was insistent. If you will just tell me what you want, I'll try to find it for you. The demon answered, I eat only the tender flesh of humans and drink only their warm blood. I fly through the air far and wide in search of food, but people are protected by the Buddhas and deities, so that even though I want to kill them, I cannot. I can only kill and eat those whom the Buddhas and deities have forsaken. Hearing this, the boy decided to give his own body for the sake of the law, so that he could hear the entire verse. Your food is right here, he said. You need look no further. Since I'm still alive, my flesh is warm, and since my flesh is warm, so is my blood. Therefore, I ask you to teach me the rest of the verse, and in exchange I will offer you my body. Then the demon grew furious and demanded, Who could believe your words? After I've taught you the rest of the verse, who can I call on as a witness to make you keep your promise? The boy replied, This body of mine is mortal, but if I give my life for the law, casting away this vile body that would otherwise die in vain, in the next life I will certainly attain enlightenment and become a Buddha. The next life being the next moment after his death, right? I will receive a pure and wonderful body. It will be like throwing away a piece of crockery and receiving a precious vessel in exchange. I call upon Brahma and Chakra, the four heavenly kings and the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas of the 10 directions to be my witnesses. I could not possibly deceive you in their presence. The demon, someone mollified, said, If what you say is true, I will teach you the rest of the verse. The boy Snow Mountains was overjoyed and, removing his deerskin garment, spread it out for the demon to sit upon while he preached. The boy knelt, bowed his head to the ground, and placed his palms together in reverence, saying, quote, All I ask is that you teach me the rest of the verse. Thus he offered his heartfelt respect to the demon. The demon, seating himself on the deerskin, then recited these words. Quote, Extinguishing the cycle of birth and death, one enters the joy of nirvana. The moment he heard this, the boy was filled with joy, and his reverence for the verse was boundless. Resolving to remember it in his next life, he repeated it over and over again and etched it deep in his heart. He pondered, thinking to himself, I rejoice that this verse, though it came from a demon, is no different from the teaching of a Buddha, but at the same time I lament that I alone have heard it and that I am unable to transmit it to others. Thereupon, he inscribed the stanza on stones, cliff faces, and the trees along the road, and he prayed that those who might later pass by would see it, understand its meaning, and finally enter the true way. This done, he climbed a tall tree and threw himself down before the demon. But before he had reached the ground, the demon quickly resumed his original form as Chakra, caught the boy and gently placed him on a level spot. Bowing before him reverently, the deity said, In order to test you, I held back the Thus Come One's sacred teaching for a time, causing anguish in the heart of a bodhisattva. I hope you will forgive my fault and save me without fail in my next life. Then all of the heavenly beings gathered around and praised the boy Snow Mountain, saying, Excellent, excellent, he is truly a bodhisattva. By casting away his body to listen to half a verse, the bodhisattva was able to eradicate offenses, calling for 12 kalpas of the sufferings of birth and death, and attain enlightenment. His story is referred to as in the Nirvana Sutra. In the past, the boy Snow Mountains was willing to give his life to hear but half a verse. How much more thankful should we be to hear a chapter or even a volume of the Lotus Sutra? How can we ever repay such a blessing? Indeed, if you care about your next life, you should make this bodhisattva your example. Even though you may be too poor to offer anything of value, if the opportunity should arise to give up your life to acquire the law of the Buddha, you should offer your life in order to pursue the law. So what is all that about? Follow the law, not the person. Anyone, including you, who is willing and able to instruct others in the Dharma. You should feel honor, respect, and be filled with conviction. What a wonderful opportunity you have. The Bodhisattva way, Look at the appreciation of the Snow Mountains boy here. That's about resolve, commitment, but deep abiding respect, dignity for the teachings. They are your Buddhahood. They are Buddhahood. They are the Buddha. However you need to conjugate it or make it central in your thinking. To hear it, to speak it, is to validate it, is to inculcate it. My favorite word lately. This body of ours, in the end, will become nothing more than the soil of the hills and fields. Therefore, it is useless to begrudge your life. For though you may wish to, you cannot cling to it forever. Even people who live a long time rarely live beyond the age of 100. And all the events of a lifetime are like a dream, like the dream of one dreams in a brief nap. Though a person may have been fortunate enough to be born as a human being and may have even entered the monkhood, if he fails to study the Buddha's teaching and to refute its slanderers, but simply spends his time in idleness and chatter, then he's no better than an animal dressed in monk's robes. He may call himself a monk and earn his livelihood as such, but in no way does he deserve to be regarded as a true monk. He is nothing but a thief who has stolen the title of a monk. How shameful. How frightening. Frightening because this represents quite a deception, doesn't it? Don't even value the teachings enough to understand with the dignity and depth of respect that one would give one's own Buddha. As long as you're alive and conscious, you can be Buddha. There's no value in being maudlin or begrudging your life. You have it, use it. Awaken your Buddha. Every moment of the day, every moment of your life. In the theoretical teachings of the Lotus Sutra, there's a passage that reads, quote, "We care nothing for our bodies or lives, but are anxious only for the unsurpassed way." Translations are a little weird, and even if this is translated accurately, the meaning is not that we begrudge our bodies, not that we care about our bodies, but that they don't take precedence. They're a vehicle, they're an ability, they're an opportunity to awaken. Beyond that, they're just earthly devices. Devices we are opportune to have in order to awaken our Buddha. Another passage from the Essential Teachings reads, quote, "Not hesitating even if it cost them their lives," end quote. The Nirvana Sutra says, "One's body is insignificant while the law is supreme. One should give one's life in order to propagate the law." That doesn't mean kill yourself. That means dedicate your every waking moment. Use this life to awaken Buddha. Buddha-ness. Thus, both the theoretical and essential teachings of the Lotus Sutra as well as the Nirvana Sutra all indicate that one should give one's life to spread the law. It is a grave offense to go against these admonitions, and though invisible to the eye, the error piles up until it sends one plummeting to hell. It is like heat or cold, which has no shape or form that the eye can see. Yet in winter, the cold comes to attack the trees and grasses, humans and beasts, and in the summer the heat comes to torment people and animals. As a lay believer, the important thing for you is to chant Namu Myoho Renge Kyo, single-mindedly, and to provide support for the monks. And if we go by the words of the Lotus Sutra, you should also teach the sutra to the best of your ability. When the world makes you feel downcast, you should chant Namu Myoho Renge Kyo, remembering that although the sufferings of this life are painful, those in the next could be much worse. And when you are happy, you should remember that your happiness in this life is nothing but a dream within a dream, and that the only true happiness is that found in the pure land of Eagle Peak. And with that thought in mind, chant Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. Continue your practice without backsliding until the final moment of your life. And when that time comes, behold, when you climb the mountain of perfect enlightenment and gaze around you in all directions, then your amazement, you will see that the entire realm of phenomena is the land of tranquil light. The ground will be of lapis lazuli, and the eight paths will be set apart by golden ropes. Four kinds of flowers will fall from the heavens, and music will resound in the air. All Buddhas and Bodhisattvas will be present in complete joy, caressed by the breezes of eternity, happiness, true self, and purity. The time is fast approaching when we too will count ourselves among their number. But if we are weak in a resolute mind and conviction, we will never reach that wonderful place. If you still have questions, I'm waiting to hear them. Respectfully, Nichiren. If ever in this day and age we needed advice on how to carry on our practice, how to envision our practice, how to feel our debt of gratitude for our practice, how, in fact, to conduct our lives in dedicated resolve to the law, to our Buddhahoods, to Myoho Renge Kyo. In every waking moment, we need to be Myoho Renge Kyo. For all of life that we experience, know about, theorize about, dream about, all of it is our experience of samsara, influenced as it is by our dedicated resolve to Myoho Renge Kyo. The more you chant, the more your life is the Dharma. The more you spend your time on this earth in the Dharma, the less the dream drifts into nightmare, the more upholding of your Buddha-ness is filled, strengthened. And at the moment of death, when you conceptualize your life, it will be a grand release, a moment of exaltation, a moment of understanding what your resolve has been about. That is the land of tranquil light. Follow? There's no afterlife, because after life, there's no experience. So how then would you experience your Buddhahood? Only in this life can you experience. So get with it. Get on it. Don't wait another moment. Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. Thanks so much for being here. Your support, as Nichiren says, is invaluable. We'll see you in the next one. Thank you.